Welcome to Canada Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation focuses on the race for Delaware's U.S. House seat, and we are joined by Independent Party of Delaware candidate Catherine Purcell. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us on Canada Conversations.
Thank you very much, Tom. Nice to be here.
So let's start with what prompted you to run for U.S. House this election cycle?
So, of course, I was disgusted with the way things were being handled on Capitol Hill and in our communities, and I was asked by the Independent Party to run, and I thought about it and, you know, walked through the door when the door opened. I feel that I'm very qualified for the position, so I would be doing my country a disservice by not stepping up and at least getting into the race to voice the American people's opinion about what's going on. And I have really good intel and feedback on the American voice, which is my job on Capitol Hill.
So I stepped in. You mentioned that you feel you have great qualifications for the job. What should voters know about your qualifications? Perhaps specifically some things they wouldn't necessarily glean from looking at your website or doing a Google search of you.
So I'm a people person, and I've been a people person since a very young age. I've been knocking on doors since fifth grade. I was in sales and, of course, candy bar sales, then moved to real estate and mortgage sales, health club sales, ran health clubs that pulled in $1 million a year, developed after-school programs for the children, which are successfully running in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, which I would love to take that footprint and bring it to the Delaware area because it helps the children. I speak multiple languages, Spanish, French, English, Sign Language, Braille, Syrian, Arabic, Greek, Vietnamese, and Russian. And with those languages, I have a strong outreach program through social media to learn about the different countries and how they affect the United States of America. I also have done 55,000 Uber and Lyft rides after I retired from 32 years of real estate and mortgage banking. And the reason I was doing those rides is because I really enjoy it. And I covered 9 states. I have been all over the United States driving and speaking with people, but I was able to cover 9 states and have 55,000 conversations one-on-one with either one person or a group of 7 people. I continue to do that because I love listening to people and learning from them, but I just feel that the knowledge that I've gained through my travels through life is something that we need in Congress, and I'm willing to step up, you know, even though the arrows are being shot at me left and right by both sides, I'm willing to step up and say, you know what? No, this is what the American people think because I've been listening to them. So.
Let's talk a little bit about some issues. How well do you feel the federal government, specifically Congress, has done in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic? And if there's still no readily available vaccines or widely available treatments for the virus by the end of this year, what would you want Congress to prioritize as an ongoing response if you were elected?
So I have worked in neuropathology with the D.C. morgue in autopsy and participated in thousands of autopsies. My specialty was the human brain. And I think that the response to the COVID has been less educating the American people on exactly how viruses operate and more on just cover your mouth, you know, and people who are using the masks and pulling them on and off, it's not effective with reducing bacterial flow or a viral load that could be coming at you. So I believe that we should take a stronger approach on educating the American people on how viruses perform so that they can be more comfortable. Now, when we were in the morgue working with infectious diseases, and I've worked with meningitis, with HIV, we were completely covered from head to toe. You didn't have an area open that a little tiny 0.05 microorganism could get through. And when you were done in that lab, you turned your clothes inside out in such a fashion that, you know, imagine critters sticking on your clothes, right? They're on the outside of the clothes because you've been working with them. You have to turn it inside out and contain the critters, and then you step outside the door, but your clothes are burned. So the fact that we're telling people, you know, just wear a mask, it's really not effective, because the way that people are wearing the mask and the cloth that they're using, and the fact that it's not effective, is evidence that the problem is not as severe as we were originally told on day one. So yes, we're waiting for a vaccine, but we do have cures. One of the terrible things that's going on is real doctors are being silenced and pushed, their voice is being pushed down immediately. So this is a problem. The doctors need to be able to communicate about viruses and diseases in order to solve the problem. And we need to be able to get the information from all over. And so we cannot have social media platforms that are not medical professionals shutting down the voice of true medical professionals.
Is there anything there that Congress can do about some of these issues you mentioned, or is it just kind of, you know, leading by example?
Well, I mean, one thing Congress can do is put stronger demands on the social media companies that are silencing truth, you know, which they're trying to do. But, you know, that's a serious issue. And on television stations that are twisting the truth that's being let out, you know, just like on a cigarette packet, there's a warning that says, you know, you could die if you smoke this. If someone is pushing propaganda that is outright lies, we should have warnings on that before they air, because it's propaganda. And the public should not be led to believe that it's truth, which I believe is what's happening now. So what Congress could do is, you know, make sure that there's stricter warning labels on media that's not telling the truth, that have been caught multiple times lying, and, you know, and then if they continue to tell the truth in the future, then they could have their warning label removed. But, you know, you would earn that warning label by spreading false information.
The pandemic is also obviously thrown the country into a recession, high levels of unemployment. What role can Congress play in getting the economy back on track, especially if the pandemic and its impact continue into 2021?
Well, the economy does have to get up and running. As I drive around the state, the country, American mom and pop businesses are forced to shut. And one of the ways that we can reopen safely is by educating the public on proper hygiene and how and where viruses can survive. Clorox is excellent. We used it in the labs. There's cleaning materials that can prevent the virus from spreading. One of the reasons that it spread in the jails is because they're filthy. And I don't know if you ever read Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, which back in the day was talking about the meatpacking industry and the disease that was spread in that. That was all because of cleanliness. So when you educate a person on how to keep a home as clean as a scientific lab that's working on the viruses, then you can vastly reduce the spread of infection. So the economy has to open. You can't just not work and not, you know, produce and educate our children. You can't just stop it like that. We need to educate people on how viruses actually spread and how to keep safe from that.
Is it realistic for Congress or even state governments to enforce kind of the hygiene and cleanliness things that you're talking about in businesses and other areas, you know, that maybe are normally outside the purview of you know, the government?
Well, our Constitution says that the government is not to interfere with business, with commerce. So, you know, if we give them power to interfere with commerce, then we'll never get that power back. And in some cases, the commerce that's being, and what I see is the commerce that's being shut down is the American mom and pop businesses, which is approximately self-employed businesses is 97% of the United States. So if you allow the 3% businesses to stay open and we're funneling our money into those 3% big businesses that appear to have links to China because their supply chains are coming from China, then you could just devastate our economy. So the Constitution is what is protects us from Congress interfering with commerce. And there, I feel that's under siege right now.
Let's talk about some other issues. Healthcare was clearly a major issue in the 2018 midterm elections. There's still uncertainty about the future of the Affordable Care Act. At the same time, there's a growing push on the progressive side of the Democratic Party for some kind of Medicare for all. What do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing healthcare in this country? And if it's not the ACA or Medicare for all, what should it be?
Well, I feel that we have to look at what is the problem that the seniors or the people that need healthcare, the disabled, actually need. And right now, the medication cost for healthcare is just, it's too high. So there has to be a way of bringing medication costs and hospital visits, hospital costs, into a reasonable realm where people can actually afford it. So that would mean attacking the pharmaceutical companies who were selling these medications at exorbitant prices and maybe not attacking, but getting them to work and to, you know, be a little bit more compassionate and the less greedy on the profits that they're receiving for the medication. Because the skyrocketing medication cost is one of the issues why we have a huge healthcare problem. The other thing as I spoke to many people that are in the healthcare industry, the home healthcare, in that situation, the elderly or the disabled person is happier and the worker is happier. And so I would like to see funding directed more towards those programs where there's an outreach of people going into the community and, you know, making sure that the person is okay to in their living environment. So I just feel that, you know, healthcare is definitely a big issue, but we have to say, where is it broken? And it's really broken in the cost of it. And who's making the biggest money out of it?
Let's talk a little bit about the protests that the country has seen throughout the spring and summer focused on issues surrounding racial equity. The topics of debate have kind of run the gamut from removal of monuments and renaming sports teams to police reform and addressing disparities in areas like housing, education, and such. What do you believe Congress's role is in addressing some of these racial equity issues?
Well, race is something interesting because if you accuse me of being a racist and I am a racist, then it's easy to prove. I might have a KKK outfit or a noose outside my house or a specific flag that is directed towards demeaning another person. So you can prove that a person is racist quite easily. But if someone accuses me of being racist and I'm not racist, how do I prove I'm not racist? You know, just show a picture. I'm white, so I show a picture of somebody that I'm with somebody that's black. It doesn't prove I'm not racist. So the term when they bash back and forth with each other and say, well, you're just racist, you know, it's now become just a word. The real issue is with the riots is that people are coming into the communities from outside the communities and causing the damage, tearing things up. You've got the BLM, Antifa, that are doing the protests. Black Lives Matter is going into the neighborhood and pulling in the children from the neighborhood. You've got Antifa standing behind them, burning everything. They're both in masks. The kids in the neighborhood are handed a brick to throw, and who gets in trouble? The child in the neighborhood. So we do have to have the ability to voice our opinions in public and to protest, but the tearing up statues and other people's property is not our right. And the fact that they're trying to destroy history, we have to learn from our history. You can't just wipe it out and think it's going to go away. We need those lessons that we've experienced to be able to progress forward.
So is there anything in terms of police reform or other issues that you feel that Congress should be addressing or acting on?
So I am a martial artist and also have studied Taekwondo, black belt, and then gone on to study Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling, and MMA cage fighting. The moves that were taught, and I also trained police officers in takedown moves, the moves that we teach the officers are as deadly as a bullet and as effortless as pulling a trigger. So when you're in a classroom, the officer is in such, or the person, the opponents that are fighting each other are in a situation where if one person feels they're in danger, they tap out and the other person immediately releases. In a situation that the officers are experiencing, they have the person in the move, but the person is not tapping out. There's no coach to say, blow the whistle and back two people off of each other. It's a real life situation. And once that other person continues to struggle, the officer moves into position, they could just squeeze their arm in a rear naked chokehold, flex your muscles, and it could sever the carotid arteries off the person that you're fighting. You know, so what's important is the training that the officers need to go through mentally to prepare for this type of fight. So in the martial arts arena, the tap outs there, they have to go through some psychological training to help them understand that when they're in that move, that should I pull the trigger or should I not pull the trigger? Because the move that you're taught in martial arts and MMA is your trigger. And they are all deadly. You know, thousands of them that they learn are all deadly. So the police officers that are out there, you know, they're seeing the worst of the worst people day in, day out. We're calling them for domestics. We're calling them for shootings. We're calling them, you know, for accidents. It's negative. It's negative, negative for them. If they don't have a way to release that negative energy constructively, then it's going to build up within them so that when they're chasing somebody down and then they finally catch them and then they tackle them and then that person's resisting and the crowd is screaming and yelling you know, about the injustice and crowding around the officer. The officer has to have the mental capacity to know how far to go with that move, you know, and I feel that is what is lacking, because if they had that in the previous instances, such as George Floyd, then they may not have kept on going. Their anger may not have taken over. Their frustration may not have taken over in the moment where they continued to press in a move that they're deadly.
So no matter how the 2020 elections turn out, the political atmosphere is likely to remain pretty contentious. How would you work with colleagues from other parties to tackle issues in Congress?
Well, one of the reasons that I'm on the independent ticket is so that I can reach across the aisle to both parties and not be subjected to having to go along with the party because another agenda wants to be taken care of. So I'm pretty good at getting people to focus on the issue and to stop, you know, any superfluous language that's coming out and direct people to the issue at hand. I would love to see us, you know, just address one issue at a time and take it to the side and then go to the next one and take it to the side instead of having bills that are filled with all sorts of piggybacked information, piggyback things that other people want to do that really have nothing to do with the issue at hand. With technology today, if I say, you know, how do you feel about the Second Amendment? You could text me back and say, this is how I feel. You know, why do we have to have bills that are just stacked with pork?
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle? And how would you address it if you were elected?
Well, I feel education is a huge problem throughout the United States. We have elderly that cannot read, cannot write. Now we have students that are home, and the elderly that can't read and write are expected to teach the kids. They don't have the skills themselves. So the education system is broke. And if you don't educate people, then you're just fuel. You might as well put fire, fuel on the fire, because that is the key. So my theories on education is that it needs to be divided into sections. And the first section, let's say you have math and you divide math 101 into 10 sections. The person should stay in math 101.1 until they get it and then go to math 101.2. And regardless of their age, they stay there. Because if you repeat it long enough, just like a rap song, you're going to get the lyrics. And then you progress people up at their own pace. And the end result is they actually know the information. Right now, we're pushing people through on a grade system, and they are graduating not even knowing survival skills. So if they don't know how to balance a checkbook or how the banking system works or how to survive or how to make a living, then, you know, we have a chance that more of them would turn to crime, thus exacerbating the problems throughout the United States. I would prefer that all of my neighbors be highly educated, because if the enemy comes in to take over, I'm surrounded by educated people that can give valuable input. But the people have been dumbed down. They're not teaching the history. This is why the statues want to be burned down. You know, they don't know mathematics when they graduate. They don't know anything about banking. They don't know anything about how to buy a house, the most, you know, the biggest purchase you'll probably make in your life, or how to buy an automobile. They don't know this. And I think that that's a big focus, that if we help people thrive individually, that as a country, we will thrive.
Catherine Purcell, Independent Party of Delaware, candidate for Delaware's U.S. House seat. We thank you for your time on Canada Conversations.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate you. Thank you.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. Candidate Conversations are part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Tom Byrne. Thanks for listening.